Case number 98-1379 et al. Natural Resources Defense Council et al. Petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency and Gina McCarthy. Mr. Pugh for the petitioners, Mr. Ray for the respondents, Mr. Steinberg for the intervener.
Good morning. Jim Pugh for Petitioners NRDC and Sierra Club. This case concerns an even broader exclusion from RCRA, and it excludes any listed hazardous wastes that in EPA's view are comparable to fossil fuels in terms of the hazardous substances they contain. It allows these excluded wastes to be burned in ordinary boilers anywhere in the country, including boilers that don't have to have and don't have any pollution control equipment at all, that don't have to meet any emission limits at all, that don't have to have their don't have to monitor their emissions, and don't have to have any permit under either RCRA or the Clean Air Act. The statutory interpretation on which this exclusion rests is that EPA has discretion to declare that listed hazardous wastes are not wastes at all, and that burning those listed hazardous wastes does not count as discard because they're fuel, not waste. Mm-hmm. Now,
that states the issue, but it doesn't suggest the answer.
Well,
I mean, if it's not discarded, why is it waste?
Section 6924Q addresses precisely that issue.
Thank you for using the code, Chief.
Well, and I'm sorry, I didn't do that in our brief. Mm-hmm. But Section 6924 was designed to fix that very problem. And it does so by providing that EPA has to set standards for facilities that combust, that either produce a fuel from any listed, any hazardous waste that's listed under Section 3001 or identified under Section 3001. And it goes further, just to make things especially clear, and provides that even commercial chemical products are within the term listed hazardous waste when they're burned as fuel or used to make a fuel in lieu of their original intended use. And the purpose, the problem that Congress is trying to solve is exactly what's going on in this exclusion. The burning of listed hazardous waste is unregulated burning of listed hazardous waste as fuel in boilers. And the statutory interpretation that EPA is relying on here is the same in substance as the statutory interpretation that underlay the regulations that Congress wanted to override. And the decision to override, I should say that the AMC 1 court uses the term override. The Senate report for the legislation used the term change that interpretation. But both the statutory text and the history in both houses of Congress make entirely clear that what Congress wanted to do was to stop EPA from claiming that listed hazardous wastes were fuel, not waste, and to require the agency to regulate them under RCRA.
Well, they tell us that that's exactly what they told this court in AMC.
Well, you know, that's an interesting argument, Your Honor. What they're trying to do is import EPA's brief from that case into the decision in the AMC case. But if you go through the AMC case, that's clearly not what AMC was talking about. It starts, I think, at page 1179, by saying this case turns on the definition of discard in section 1004, in section 6903.27. That's the question it was trying to resolve. And then when it addresses other provisions like 6924Q, it says it's doing that to try to shed light on the meaning of discard in 6903. And when it gets, that's at page 1187. It then says that it wanted to see if not just 6924, but also the other provisions, 6924R, for example, see if those provisions supported EPA's expansive reading of the regular definition of discard in section 6903.
Well, how exactly were the materials at issue in American Mining Congress being used at the refineries? Were they creating fuel?
Well, they were being used to make gasoline, which is the end product of the refineries. But
so why didn't that put them right in the heart of 6924Q?
What I'm trying to say is that the decision clearly didn't view gasoline as something that was covered by 6924. It's not a hazardous waste-derived fuel. If you look at the House report and the Senate report, they're not talking about refineries or making gasoline or anything
like
that.
Let's look at the statute.
And
let's look at the statute.
All right.
The House and Senate reports were not adopted by Congress.
No, I know. But at Chevron step one, I simply mentioned that the problem they're trying to solve is relevant. And the problem they were trying to solve wasn't either refineries or gasoline. It was the burning of hazardous waste in ordinary boilers. In any event, if that were correct, if every single waste that is burned as a fuel, if it's up to EPA to determine whether that is discarded in the ordinary sense, then Section 6924Q doesn't do much. Nothing in the statute would stop EPA from rolling the clock back to the same exact problem that existed in 1983, where the agency insisted it had discretion to say that all hazardous waste-derived fuels.
In this case, I mean, you've gone right to the merits, but I think, can you talk up front a little bit about what I found curious, and that was in the government's brief, that it seemed to bifurcate these materials into things that were treated and not treated and had a very elaborate and thoughtful explanation for coverage that appeared nowhere in the regulatory record.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I guess the point, one remarkable point about this is that EPA doesn't actually defend the rule rationale that it put forth in the rule. In the rule, EPA said Section 6924Q doesn't apply to any of the excluded wastes. EPA's brief says Section 6924Q applies to some of the excluded wastes. Well, obviously, that's a different rationale. We would submit it's a conflicting rationale, and if EPA agrees that the rationale it offered in the rule is wrong, that should be the end of the matter, because a rule cannot stand if the agency has misconceived the law.
It divided them into things that waste that have to be treated and non-treated. Do you have any sense of whether that's half and half, or is most of it consistent with the original explanation, doesn't have to be treated, or does most of it have to be treated, or do we not know what they mean by treated?
Your Honor, I can't tell from the, there's nothing in the rule that explains this. I can't tell from the brief how much has to be treated, how much doesn't have to be treated, or in fact why it makes any difference under Section 6924Q whether these wastes are treated or not. There's no basis to draw that distinction. The other distinction that EPA draws is between.
There's certainly a subset of rule of waste that don't have to be treated, that they defend under the given explanation. What is our rule governing? If we just assume, if we thought there were a Chenery problem, at least as to the explanation as to what happens to waste that have to be treated, do we still uphold the rule if we were ultimately to conclude the reason it was right and reject all the other challenges, or does the Chenery problem vitiate it entirely?
Well, I think that if this
is severable, I guess.
I don't see any basis for severing it. At least there's no basis in the record that it would explain why some materials actually are permissible and other materials aren't. I guess this is a factual matter, moving away from the statutory definition or the statutory argument for a second. There's no dispute that this exclusion excludes even listed commercial chemical products. And the court need look no further than page 200 of the joint appendix, where EPA provides a list of excluded commercial chemical products that have all been listed as hazardous waste. That's table 2 on page 100. And EPA, in fact, describes all of those excluded wastes as likely candidates to be burned. That's on page 199. There's another interesting distinction that EPA's lawyers make in their brief that wasn't made in the rule, and that's between on-specification chemicals and off-specification chemicals. The statute doesn't make that distinction. It says any commercial chemical product that is burned as a fuel instead of being used as its original intended use. And so EPA's attempt to argue that only off-specification chemicals are covered is at odds with the plain meaning of the statute. Maybe it would make sense that I don't know if there are sort of more points to make on Chevron step one. I would like to just point out, as I think my colleague did, that not only doesn't the AMC 1 case itself talk about what Section 3004Q actually means. But the Horsehead Development case, that's 16F3rd, I think it's 1263, confirms that's not what the AMC 1 case was talking about. All it was doing was using Section 6924Q to see whether EPA's especially expansive definition of the normal definition of solid waste in Section 6903 would wash. And whatever EPA may have said in its briefs, what the court read was whether 6924Q sheds light on this expansive definition of 6903 that EPA was offering. If the court has no questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Norman Rabe, again, with the Justice Department. With me for this argument is Steve Silverman from EPA's Office of General Counsel. Let me first address the issue about what petitioners are claiming was EPA's rationale for the rule, and for which they rely on a single response to comments. But what that response to comments was responding to were comments about how EPA could determine that something was not a hazardous waste. And what EPA said, consistent with AMC 1, in that response to comment was 3004Q does not trump the jurisdictional authority to decide that something is not a hazardous waste. It did not address EPA's rationale for the rule. You look at the, and these are the two comments, and this goes back to the issue of waiver, Your Honor, that we made in our brief. Petitioners have pointed to two comments that raise the issue of 6924Q. But if you look at, read those comments, which are both in the joint appendix, they don't say, they don't make the argument that petitioners have made in this case, that 6924Q is an absolute ban on determining that a material that meets the description of a hazardous waste has to be regulated as hazardous waste when it's made into fuel or when it's burned. What those comments say is that before EPA, they in fact assume that EPA has the authority to determine that these materials are not hazardous waste, but they say that what 6924Q requires is that EPA do a risk analysis before doing so, and that the benchmark analysis that EPA did in this rule is precluded.
Well, I'm on 547 of the JA, and they say, quote, such an approach, the agency's comparable fuels proposal will likely result in higher exemption concentrations, blah, blah. Such an approach would violate clear congressional mandate in, alas, they use 3004Q as well, of RCRA to regulate the burning of hazardous waste for energy recovery.
I'm sorry, where are you reading from, Your Honor?
I'm on 547. JA 547.
Right, and they said...
Comment 9, it after said, the indentation, the comparable
right,
fuels proposal.
Right, the comment says, the agency's comparable fuels proposal mm-hmm. will likely result in higher exemption concentrations than levels that would normally be derived using a risk-based approach. Such an approach would violate the clear congressional mandate.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the levels, the exemption levels, mm-hmm. not whether EPA has authority to exclude the waste in the first place. They're assuming that EPA has the authority to exclude the waste in the first place. All they're arguing about is the approach for determining the constituent levels. You know, EPA has, you know, and for over 30 years under RCRA, EPA has exempted certain recyclable materials from hazardous waste regulation. And there's nothing in, and getting back again to the language of 6924Q, the statute does not say EPA must regulate any material that meets the description of a hazardous waste, if it were being disposed of, as a hazardous waste. It says EPA must establish standards for hazardous waste when they are used to produce a fuel or when they are burned as a fuel. And that's what EPA has done here. It's established standards that determine when these materials may be burned in units other than hazardous waste.
Well,
units.
I think you were saying your argument was that as to at least untreated materials, we're not going to have to establish standards. Those aren't hazardous waste. We don't
That's
need
true,
standards
there
at
are,
all.
There are two rationales depending upon it. One is the same rationale.
It seems to me their exemption argument says, you know, what 6924Q covers.
No, their argument simply just talks about the exemption levels. And this, again, goes back to what AMC
I mean, you can't do exemptions. You can't have exemption levels if you haven't
addressed up front whether or not they constitute hazardous waste within the meaning of RCRA, wouldn't that impact your exemption levels? Instead of you're thinking of them as, no, they're just not in here at all because they're not waste?
Right. What materials that as generated, you know, as they're being used as a product, as a solvent, for example, which is probably most common, and then they decide at some point that it's not clean enough to be used as a solvent. But if it meets the standards as it is and then becomes used as a fuel, that material is never discarded. It's never thrown away. It's
used when you're talking about solvents, though, is that something that falls in the commercial chemical product category?
Some do, some don't.
Well, no,
some,
but that seems to me, and goodness gracious, if AMC was clear on anything, it was that as to commercial chemical products.
There are
products,
many solvents that, there are some solvents that
are.
So
you may have some in, some out. Are they all covered by this rule?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are they covered by this rule, whether they're in or out of being a commercial chemical? They tell me that commercial chemical products are covered.
The end result is the same for all of these materials, is that they are, if they meet the standards, either with or without treatment, they are not hazardous waste at that point when used as fuels. And it's simply the logical, the rationale that gets you there. The end result is the same, whether they meet it as before treatment or after treatment. So it really doesn't make that much difference. It's simply a logical, you know, that there are two rationales depending upon whether, now if they meet the standards as generated, they're never discarded. And under AMC1, they're not solid waste. You know, and the analogy,
even if they are a commercial chemical product.
No, that's a separate problem.
Okay.
Except for commercial chemical products, which we said we have written in our brief. Commercial chemical products are subject to 3004Q. There's no question about that. This would be materials that are not commercial chemical products, such as solvents that, for instance, are hazardous waste because they're ignitable. One of the characteristics of a hazardous waste is it's called ignitability, and a lot of these. Materials, that's what they are, which simply means that they will flash, could burst into flame above a certain temperature. Materials that are obviously well-suited to being used as fuels. They're not listed as hazardous waste because they're toxic. They're not listed commercial chemical products. They're simply, you know, they exhibit what's called the characteristic of ignitability, which in some contexts makes them hazardous. You want to be careful with them, obviously, but also makes them appropriate to use as fuels.
Detective Triggers, another question in my mind, and this is get more towards the end of the briefing in this case, the transportation issues?
Yes, Your Honor.
Imagine ignitability. If you have two trucks going down the road, one's going to turn left to the waste treatment center, one's going to turn right to the refinery processing center, carrying the exact same stuff, just as ignitable at the high temperatures that are out there. Is it correct when they say your position would be that we'll treat it as they'll be subject to RCRA or not based on whether they turn left or right on that road?
Yes, Your Honor, because once the material is a fuel, fuels are ignitable. Fuels, fuels have hazardous constituents in them. Fuels burn there, and they are subject to regulation as a product. I mean, gasoline is subject to regulation. Fuel oil is subject to regulation. There are regulations that govern the transport of these materials. The same solvent material, you know, the same material that's now the waste, when it came from the chemical plant that produced it and was sent to the factory where it's being used, it was not subject to RCRA as a hazardous waste. It was subject to DOT requirements as a flammable liquid.
Yeah, but the point is the truck turning left is subject to RCRA.
And it's now, the truck turning left is subject to, whether it needs to be, you know, is perhaps necessary, I don't know. But it's still not a product.
Well, I think you would agree that Congress said it was necessary.
It's necessary because it's covered. It is
a
hazardous waste.
Congress said it was necessary.
Once a material becomes a hazardous waste, it's no longer a product, so it's not subject to regulations.
It's not question whether ignitable materials on the highway are regulated, whether they're regulated under DOT regs or what are under RIP.
And that depends on their product. You know, the exact same material from the chemical plant to the factory is subject to DOT regs. If at the factory it picks up enough dirt that they've decided now it's a waste and it's sent to a waste treatment plant, it's now subject to regulation as a RCRA, but it's exactly the same material.
In fact, it would be double covered at that point under RCRA and DOT.
It would be covered by whatever, yeah. So it's, there's, so the fact
how
that.
How does RCRA regulate it differently in transportation? Or does RCRA sort of just recognizing this distinction treat, are your RCRA regulations identical to the EPA Clean Air Act regulations?
Yes, they are.
They're identical. There's no much.
EPA Council. Yes.
He's advised that they are.
I've advised identical. That they are. And I think we make that point in our brief, Your Honor, that they are essentially the same.
Well, essentially
that
the
they
same.
They are the same.
They are the same.
And so so the issue, again, it comes down to, so EPA's, the what they are claiming is our rationale. In fact, it's in, if you look at this particular section of the response to comments that they rely on as our rationale, is under a section of response to comments that is entitled the benchmark approach versus risk-based approach. That's what this is responding to. It's not responding to whether EPA has the authority to determine that these materials are not hazardous waste. No one in the rulemaking contested that authority. This is something brand new that's being raised in litigation for the first time, which is one of the reasons that there is not an elaborate response on that issue or an elaborate explication of how 9924Q applies, because nobody raised it. Nobody in the rulemaking.
But if we, I think, as you just said, there isn't an explication you have in your brief is certainly not in the agency record. So if we were to determine that the issue was not waived, maybe we'd certainly agree there's certainly an argument there that it's waived, but if we were to reject that, then would you concede that the explanation you gave is not in the agency record?
It's not written explicitly, Your Honor. I think it's certainly implicit in that the agency determined that these materials, which are clear, Your Honor, you have to remember a little history here. The EPA rules prior to 6924 provided that commercial chemical products and other classes of placements of waste without, just broadly, when burned for energy recovery were not exempt from solid waste and hazardous waste regulation. And that's what Congress was concerned about, this broad absence of regulation. The legislative history talks about hazardous waste ending up in residential fuel oil, for example, Your Honor. And so what Congress was concerned about was that there was simply no even looking at or considering, which is a broad, anything burnt for energy recovery is exempt. So what Congress told EPA to do was take a look at this, create regulations, decide, and the Senate report talks explicitly says EPA may ultimately decide that some hazardous waste-derived fuels require regulation and some do not, and we quote that in our brief. What Congress said was set standards. It didn't say set hazardous waste standards. It didn't say regulate these things under 7.5C. So EPA did exactly that. Long before this rule came about, EPA established comprehensive regulations under something called the Boilers and Industrial Furnaces, or BIF rule, environmental speak, which said just the opposite. It said, all right, anything that meets these tests or these lists as a hazardous waste, when burned as a fuel, is a hazardous waste. And these are the emissions, and you can burn them in boilers and industrial furnaces. They don't have to be incinerators, but they have to get a RCRA permit. They have to, the wastes are subject to all the manifesting requirements and everything else. They adopted a comprehensive set of standards saying all hazardous waste, all materials that would be hazardous waste, are regulated under Subtitle C. This rule at issue here is a narrow exception to that broader rule that requires it. And that, you know, is clear from the rulemaking. The people dealing with this rule, commenting on it, EPA, were well aware of this history, that this was an exception to EPA standards promulgated pursuant to 6924Q, that made them all hazardous waste. So it's certainly implicit, given that they've already regulated these things pursuant to 6924Q. If they're creating an exemption, they believe that they have the authority and that 6924Q does not mean it, as long as there's, and they, you know, and they certainly did set standards for these materials. There are requirements on viscosity, there are requirements on
heat. You're over your time, so if you wind it up.
So there are standards that ensure these are fuel-like and that minimize the levels of hazardous constituents to those found in fuels that are burned in much larger quantities every year. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Steinberg.
Good morning. The standing problem in this case is an evidentiary problem, but it's a serious one. Standing is determined as of the date litigation is commenced. That's fundamental, and it's undisputed. On August 19, 1998, the day this case was filed, there was no injury to any of the petitioner's members from any comparable fuels. The record is devoid of proof suggesting actual injury or threatened injury as of that date. This means that petitioners cannot establish injury in fact as a basic matter. The earliest evidence they offer is a one-page letter from Exxon dated May 17, 1999, almost a year after the case was filed, written to the DEQ stating Exxon's intention to begin burning comparable fuels. But that does not establish injury in fact. For one thing, the rule requires that before burning comparable fuels, a facility must give detailed public notice in the local newspaper describing the fuels to be burned and describing the estimated volume of fuels to be burned. No such notice for Exxon appears anywhere in the record. Worse,
we have cases that deal with probabilities. Now,
correct, Your Honor.
I understand that the whole concept is arguable, but we certainly have some help there.
Yes.
So once the rule is there with the exemption there, then isn't there a probability that somebody is going to use it?
It might well have been possible to develop declarations supporting a probability-based theory of standing here. Certainly, Petitioner's Counsel has done that successfully in other cases. Here we have a factual record with no evidence at all. We have declarations dated summer of 2013, cast in the present tense, that shed no light on actual or threatened injury as of the
date. What about Doris Falkenhayner, who lives near Exxon? And Exxon had, in 1997, a pending application to burn these hazardous materials.
Correct. And Exxon was not legally able to begin burning comparable fuels.
It certainly wanted to. It had a pending application and then obviously didn't need to have that acted upon when the rule came out.
Correct. And we have a declaration from that person dated summer of 2013 that sheds no light on actual or threatened injury back in August of 1998.
Well, I think she lived there still, and she tells how long she lived there. She lived there in 1998, and she's concerned that these burning, which they wanted to do in 1997, was going to harm her. I don't know what more she would have said. I'm worried now, and I was worried. And you're saying she didn't add, and I was also I had this same worry in 1998?
Yes, the withdrawal of the permit application, Your Honor, just to be clear, page DEC 37, is in the same May 17, 1999 letter. So it's a one letter that does both. It gives notice of an intent to burn in the future, and it also says hereby withdraws its Part A and Part B applications, which were submitted in 1997. So back then it was burning under RCRA for which a permit was sought.
So has the fear that if they waited until somebody got closer to burning and then tried to come with the objection, you would then hear you argue that they waited too long. You could have acted when the rule was promulgated rather than waiting until the time when the industry had invested in the process.
Well, there are several.
Would you like to argue that? I mean,
There are several answers to that, Your Honor. The first is, again, declarations based on threatened injury from probabilities are accepted by this court, and it could easily have been possible to do that here, but that's not what petitioners chose to do, number one. Number two, petitioners could, in a circumstance like that, come in with a petition based on grounds arising after the 90th day, pointing out that what was once a mere possibility has now become real. The rule is therefore now affecting them in a concrete way, so that standing would exist at that time. So we're not saying these injuries are somehow legally beyond being cognizable. We have an evidentiary record here that's completely lacking in proof as of August 1998 when the case was filed, and that's the only relevant date for jurisdictional purposes.
Can I ask, how would someone have noticed that you've actually started doing this?
The first notice is the notice to the state agency, the Exxon notice being a sample of that. That's required by the rule.
Under the new rule, you still have to give the notice to the state agency?
That's step one. Step two is the notice.
And that's a public record notice document?
It's a public document obtainable from the state.
Obtainable, what, through like a FOIA, or is it there as a matter of record you can find it?
Certainly it would be obtainable.
It's like a public filing on a website or
Each state has its own approach, but the point is that it's a public document. It's not a confidential, restricted piece of information. And, in fact, we have a couple of such letters in the record that the petitioners obtained. So those are not difficult to obtain. Step two, though, is the notice in the local newspaper that says we intend to begin burning. This is the type of fuel we're going to burn. These are the estimated volumes and so forth. We only have that in the record for one facility, and that's dated 2010, 12 years after this case was filed. So we have here an extraordinary evidentiary problem in that the record has no evidence at all of injury, actual or threatened, as of the day the case was filed. That means Article III standing isn't here. But moreover, the declarations don't attribute any injury to actual burning because there's no evidence of actual burning. Not one of the declarants.
It doesn't have to be actual burning. You agree that imminence and probability can.
That it could have been done that way, but it wasn't. Correct. So we have no injury. In fact, we also have no redressability because we have no member who says this facility is burning comparable fuels and here's the problem. Unless there are questions,
All right. Thank you. How much time does Mr. Pugh have?
Mr. Pugh
had
4 minutes remaining.
Right. Very quickly on standing.
Would you mind starting with the waiver argument?
Yes. There are two points to make on that. The first is that the comments are recognizing that the standards are standards that are supposed to protect human health and the environment. And what they're pointing out is that if EPA is not protecting human health and the environment, then it's not doing what Section 3004Q says. The second point is that this board...
Does that address the waiver point?
I'm simply pointing out...
Well, they said, certainly at least as to MMT, that it was very particularized to the emission standards. And I think your challenge is certainly broader than the emission standards. So where is a broader challenge?
No, I simply am pointing out that what the standards EPA has to set are standards that would protect human health and the environment. That's what comes at the end of 6924Q. And what the comments are pointing out is that if EPA isn't doing that, it's violating Section 3004Q. It's violating 6924Q. But the other point.
Well, but I think again, for purposes of waiver, we have to be a little bit more particularized, right? It can't be that someone says your emission standards violate 6924Q, and then you get to come in and say the entire regime violates 6924Q. So where do you have in the record maybe an ETC's
honest.
Comments or something that.
No, these comments are not saying that your emission standards violate Section 3004Q. These comments are saying if you don't show that public health and human health and the environment are going to be protected, then this exemption is going to violate Section 3004Q. And EPA, to be sure, EPA understood it that way. Its response is not, we've set standards. Its response is, Section 3004Q applies to hazardous waste which are burned for energy recovery. The provision does not speak to EPA's authority to determine whether particular fuels produced from energy material, from secondary materials are or not products rather than wastes. So EPA's response is exactly the issue that is teed up here. EPA is insisting that it has no obligation. Section 6924Q doesn't even speak and certainly doesn't impose any obligation on it to set standards for these facilities and these wastes. And that's the issue that's being raised here. In fact, EPA characterizes that argument the same way in its brief at page 19. The question is, you know, squarely presented, does EPA have an obligation under Section 924Q to set standards? Let me just cite a couple of cases. One is in our brief, Appalachian Power. Another is Indian Manufacturers, both of which say that the question is whether the issue is raised with enough specificity for EPA to understand and address the problem that's being raised in court. And that's certainly the case, as shown by EPA's response in response to comments documents. As to the point that EPA has set standards, you'll notice in the brief that there's no sites in the part of the brief where that claim appears. EPA can't identify any part of the record where it has set standards for the excluded waste. And I guess one last point I'd like to make. You heard counsel for EPA agree that commercial chemical products are covered by 6924Q. Now, that's the third position EPA has taken in this case. In the rulemaking, it said 6924Q doesn't apply to any of these food wastes. In its brief, EPA said 6924Q doesn't apply to on-spec chemical products. And now EPA agrees that 6924Q applies to any commercial chemical products, which is correct. That's what the statute says. But it's also correct that this rule excludes commercial chemical products, which is undisputed. The rule shows lists commercial chemical products that have been excluded, which leaves the only question, I think, which is whether 6924Q also applies to other hazardous wastes in addition to commercial chemical products. And I think the text there that is quite persuasive is the word includes. The statute says includes commercial chemical products, not means commercial chemical products, or is limited to commercial chemical products. Congress meant to get all of the hazardous wastes that were on the lists promulgated under Section 3001. That's the only meaning that gives the statute the statutory provision effect. There's no other questions.
Thank you.